The recordings have started. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. My name is Jordan Carter, for the record, Dunn & Dez, and the rapporteur for Work Party 1 of the CCWG on Enhancing ICANN Accountability. This is our meeting of the 13th of July at 20 hours UTC, and welcome, everyone, to the call. I look forward to us working through the items that are on our agenda today. The agenda draft was circulated, as I said, at our last call. I think we all acknowledge the time pressure that we're working under, and things aren't always perfect. I know that we've got a document from Izumi-san on the standard bylaws. We have pieces from Alan on the removal of individual ICANN directors and a community mechanism. Keith has just advised he hasn't got to the update on 5.6, so we'll talk about that at the end of the call in item 7 instead. And I did get fundamental bylaws stuff out to use. So we've got four chunks of work to work through, and then in kind of actions for the freeze, that's the document freeze, which happens at 23:59 on the 14th of July. So it's in about 28 hours from now. That's when we need to have any papers that we're sending through to the CCWG meeting in Paris ready to be compiled into the reading pack by the staff. Yes, Keith, that will give us more time. It just means that we'll have to review your document by email, so I hope that it isn't all that far away. So that's my review of the agenda. Are there any other items to take into account at this point that we need to be adding to this agenda? And remember, as always, that if you think of any such items during the call, we can add them in the any other business item right at the end. I'll take that as a no, and I think then our first doc to look at is the standard bylaws paper that Izumi has prepared. There was both the paper she prepared, which showed a couple of very small track changes, and then there was the covering email that she prepared, which set out a few points for us to discuss. So, Izumi, let me hand the call over to you to take us through this discussion as you see fit.
Good morning, everyone, from Tokyo. So is this the document shown on the screen that with the edited changes? Okay. So there actually aren't that many changes made to the document itself, as you can see. So the change that I made is changing the period of adopting these changes. So I deleted the period of 2 weeks, and we have to decide on what period that we put as the alternative, whether that will be 30 days, 6 days, and other options that I've listed. And another change that I made is that instead of requiring 3/4 of the level of support, several community members expressed lower ratio of support, which was 2/3. So I changed this part, and this makes it consistent with the proportion of support that is required for the board to change the bylaws, so it makes it the same ratio. And then the last point that I changed is the very last paragraph, that instead of this is not something deleting something, but I've added that for a particular set of standard bylaws changes are proposed, the community is able to reject the changes up to twice. So that is putting the limit in the number of times that the community can suggest changes, reject changes to the bylaws. So that's just all the three points that I changed in terms of the text. Maybe I'll stop here now, and then after I hear any comments or questions, I'll go on to explain about the additional considerations that we have to make as a group.
Thanks, Izumi. Do you want to manage the speaking queue, or would you like me to do that for you?
It would be nice, Jordan, if you could manage the queue. Maybe it's more efficient that I do it. So I see Steve on the top. So Steve, would you like to go?
Thank you, Izumi. The last paragraph changed, the text that's in red. Can you give us some indication of what kind of public comment support there was? Add that, and I'm just shocked at it since, well, frankly, this would allow the board to push a bylaws change through, because what would happen after two rejections? Does the bylaws change go away, or does the board get their way?
Yes, that's a good question. I think there was just one suggestion on the public comment, and I didn't observe any contradicting comments. So I've reflected on this, but if you have any concerns, as you've expressed, I think this is something that we can still discuss as a group.
Izumi, you probably had in the neighborhood of 40 dissenting comments, because all of the comments that supported the question that said, do you support the proposed changes, the proposed powers to block a bylaws change, all of us who answered yes to that are in opposition to the one commenter who thinks that that power should be limited to only two times saying no. You with me on that? I think you missed all the comments in support against that. And without articulating what happens after the second rejection, this completely leaves us in question as to whether after the second rejection the bylaw goes through or after the second rejection the bylaw dies.
Okay, sure. I understand your point, Steve. Yeah. I think this is open for discussions. Steve, so if you don't have any further comments, I'll go to Alan.
Thank you very much. Just a very small point. And I haven't gone through the rest of the document, but very often in documents like this, we'll see a threshold of three-quarters or two-thirds, and some of them will say greater than, and some will simply cite the, you know, must reach that number. I don't really care which it is, but we should be consistent. So someone needs to go review the whole document and make sure that wherever we're citing a fraction, that it's either you must reach that fraction or you must be greater than that fraction. I know in a number of sets of rules I've seen, including the bylaws, some were one way, some were the other way, and that makes for confusion.
Oh, understood, Alan. I don't recall the word over, but I think it would be good to double-check. So thank you for this point.
Yeah, it's not really your job, but someone along the way should do a consistency check before we submit the document again.
All right, sure. Understood. Thanks. So let's go to Mr. Araste.
Thank you. Kavusa speaking. I suggest that we take the document perhaps in order, but I have no problem to start from the bottom. I am also surprised why the number of the rejection or time is limited to two. Where these two comes from? I don't think that we should have arbitrary selections, and I think that we discuss that if the ICANN board changes the bylaw, and we need to have a poor course of action, and I don't think that at least I have difficulty to agree with the replacement. I prefer to have the initial paragraph without any limit. So it weakened totally the situation, and that is important. We are dealing with the bylaw, whether standard or not, but bylaw is the fundamental provisions of the entire process. So I have difficulty to agree with the proposed changes, and I am in favor to retain the initial paragraph. Once again, I would wish, if distinguished colleagues agree, to start discussion paragraph by paragraph, but not jumping, because for me it would be difficult to follow. But for the last paragraph, I do not support the changes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Caboose. So your point taken, as well as Steve's, and I see suggestion from Matthew that we return to the original text if there's overwhelming support for this. So let's go to Jordan.
Thanks, Izumi. I just wanted to go from the top down. So looking at the point about the change to the two-week time frame, I think we should leave this text as it is for this version so that we call attention to this discussion in Paris. But I think we will end up keeping it at around 2 weeks. I know that a lot of people said that they wanted in comments more time, 30 days, 60 days, until the next ICANN meeting. But I don't know if those people were considering the fact that a standard bylaws change at the moment goes through a 40-day public comment period before the board decides to approve it or not. And so the proposed bylaw change will generally already have been in circulation for quite a long time, and people will be quite aware of it. So I think that given the contradictory concerns about not wanting this to disrupt ICANN's operation too much, we'll end up settling at a reasonably short period. So I just wanted to put that on the record. I don't mind the lower threshold personally. I don't have a view on that in the last paragraph on the first page. And on the second page, I have to agree with the previous speakers. I don't think there's any mandate from any of our discussions or from the public comment period input to make this kind of limiting change here. I've gone back and read the summary just while others were talking that we did at the public comments, and this does not come through as a theme. And so I agree with the other suggestions that we should actually not make this tracked change in the frozen document. Thanks.
So I understood both points about the period and about the last paragraph adding the sentence. Just as a point of clarification, I'm fine about not adding this. I think there was specific comments when I went through each of the public comments related to this topic, which is the addition. But I agree with the observation that this wasn't necessarily a majority view. And so I think we can consider, totally consider deleting and bringing it back to the original text as supported by most in this group so far. So let's go to Greg.
Thank you. I will also agree that the text in the last paragraph should be reverted. I also think that I take Jordan's points on the 2 weeks. It feels kind of short given kind of the inevitable flop after, say, an ICANN meeting. Given that we do want to keep things moving, and this is an extraordinary power, it kind of, I think, is incumbent on the community to keep its eyes open. I'm a little uneasy with the change from 3/4 to 2/3, not so uneasy that I want to see it changed back. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. So I think you're in agreement with everybody else regarding the last paragraph, and so it looks like this 2 weeks part needs more discussion. So I see Alan next in the queue. I don't know if that's an and or you want to speak.
Thank you. Just a small thing. We probably want to say 2 weeks or whatever the time is following announcement of board approval. Sometimes there's, you know, these days they're not bad, but sometimes there's significant delay before the actual motions are announced. We don't want the time period to slip because we didn't know.
I understood your point. So to be more specific about, so how do we count 2 weeks? And the suggestion is two weeks after the announcement.
That's what I would suggest.
Understood. And I see Jordan agreeing with you. So let's go to Mr. Alaska.
Thank you very much. There is one editorial, probably mistake. The portion in the round bracket, parenthesis in French, should be limited to the time frame, but not following the announcement of the board approval. The announcement of the board approval is a part of the sentence, irrespective whether 2 weeks or any other time. So please kindly move the round bracket right-hand side after to be developed or to be identified. Now, coming to the period, I am suggesting a compromise and put 2 weeks, which I am not in favor of talking of weeks. I'm always talking of calendar days, 15 calendar days / 30 calendar days, and leave it to Paris meeting to decide between the two. However, the 15 days calendar date is short. It's really short. We know the engagement, occupations, problems of the people. Nevertheless, as Jordan mentioned, we don't decide that. So I suggest that instead of putting probably, just put round bracket as it is, 15 calendar days, / or oblique stroke, 30 calendar days, close oblique stroke, following the announcement of the board approval. This is my suggestion, between the two to be decided at Paris meeting. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Caboose. So adding the word calendar day sounds like a new option. So I think after we're done with discussing this actual text part, we'll be discussing about the possible options. And maybe I'll leave it to Jordan to see if we're still open to consider options that is not expressed on the public comments, but welcome this new input to counting these based on calendar days. So I hear this new suggestion that between 15 to 30 calendar days.
Do you allow me to defend my proposal? Weeks will differ from group of countries to group of countries. In some countries, week start on Saturday. In some countries, week start on Sunday. In some countries, we start on Monday. But calendar days is calendar days. So that is the problem. So we have to be quite careful with the future actions by the community. It depends in which country, in which group of country the community exists or lives. So we have to be quite careful.
Yes.
Either we have months or calendar days, but not weeks. But this is not critical. Okay. I don't want to spend the whole time of the working party one on this, but that is a suggestion. I make it in Paris. I make this suggestion in Paris that it is better to talk about calendar day, but I don't want to spend 15 or 20 minutes on this issue. Thank you. We should be very efficient.
Cool.
Yes. So understood the reason for supporting this. Your point is that specifying this makes the period more clear. So thank you very much. So let's go to Greg.
First, I think, 3 points. One, whatever we do here is indicative. I think in the drafting of the formal bylaws themselves, these things might get ironed out, but the more that we can iron them out beforehand, the better. Second, I think we should look at the bylaws to see how the bylaws tends to count periods of time so we can be consistent with the current usage in the bylaws, which hopefully is internally consistent. Third, I would just say that at least my interpretation of weeks is 7 days from the day on which the week starts. So it doesn't matter whether the week starts on Saturday, Sunday, or Monday in terms of when fresh week starts. It's just really 14 days, which I think actually militates in favor of Cavus's suggestion that we might as well just count in days, because then it's absolutely clear we're talking about 14 calendar days or 15 calendar days or whatever it may be. Let's follow the lead of the bylaws as they exist and choose an appropriate period of time and express it appropriately. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. So your point is that let's make the expression consistent with what the bylaw says. Caboose, can you make your point very short? Because we'll be discussing about alternative options, so I would appreciate your cooperation. So let's go to Caboose.
Yes, I'm dealing now with the paragraph that you changed from 2/3 to 2/3. I agree with that. Thank you. For me, it's consistent.
Thank you very much. So I think there are no further comments I see in terms of hands for the actual text. So, Jordan, how do you want to carry this out? So I think... there are a couple of option points for discussion.
Yeah, in your covering email, Izumi, you had written a couple of points for us to discuss, and I'm just asking staff on the call whether they are able to display that text in the screen. Adam or Brenda or Kim or Barry, are you able to put in the screen, instead of the draft text document, a copy of Izumi's covering email for this? If you are, that would be very helpful. Otherwise, she'll just have to talk us through it. In the meantime, Izumi, I think you should start talking us through what you just covered in that email. So please go ahead.
Sure, Jordan, thanks. There are 5 points I've raised as the need for further discussions, and one of the points, of course, is the period of time frame that is needed on committee's comment after the board's approval. So let me just read out the options here. 30 days, 60 days. The end of the next ICAM meeting that begins no longer than 1 month after the board posts notice of adoption. And another option is prior to such changes becoming effective. So I think I wasn't clear enough. So let me just clarify once again. So the basic idea is to, after the board makes notice on making these changes, then this 3rd suggestion is to make it the end of the next ICAM meeting that begins after this timing. I hope that was clear. And then I see this option that is suggested from Caboose to make it between 15 to 30 business days, or I can't remember the exact wording for it, but the idea is to delete the holidays and the weekend. So these are the options. Let me go to raise another issue, which is CCWG will continue to explore and explain membership structure. So the requests are made during the public comment is that they want to understand this in terms of how membership status can create created and maintained without due cost, complexity, or liability. But I feel that since we're still discussing about mechanisms, it's better for us to come up with the explanation when this is fixed. And also, I think it would be good to have clear confirmation with lawyers on how we respond. I'd like to hear your input about the approach and if there's any ways that we can work efficiently before completely waiting for it. So So that was the second point that I wanted to consult you. The third point I wanted to consult you was the point that was made. Well, CCWG will consider mechanism for limiting procedural impacts and possible delays. So I think a couple of concerns were expressed that by allowing this mechanism, then it would allow the member, especially if there are no limits in the number of times that, that the community can reject changes to the bylaws, it may make the whole process efficient. So how do we actually address this point? And so there's a question on whether putting the number of time, putting limit in the number of times for this considered to be utilized will be sufficient. That was the initial point that I put, given that there will be support for adding this paragraph, but now that I don't see support for adding this, we should come up with some other ways to address this point. The fourth issue I'd like to share is CCWG will consider a cap on the number of times this power can be utilized. And so this was something that I actually put as something that I wanted to discuss with the group. And I very much see the point that Steve has made and the others as well, that if you add this, then it might actually raise concerns for the people that who didn't express concerns under the current text. So, and I think at the moment I see more support for not adding this text and no concern so far on not adding this. So the last point that I'd like to discuss is increase on composition of SOs and ACs other than CC, NSO, and GAG. Again, this is just one comment that was expressed, that I think there's a lot of CCNSO members who are very much related to the government, and so given the CCNSO's powers the same number as the other SOs will increase the government influence. And in my opinion, I got the impression that this request is out of scope to consider as a part of this work. But we do need to consider how to respond. So this is a summary of the points that I'd like to discuss with the group, and I'd like to consult Jordan on how you want to proceed from here, whether you want to chair this part, or it would be better for me to chair. I'd be happy to bring back the chairing to you.
I'm happy to do that if you like, and then you can respond. So why don't I do that for you. We'll take a couple of comments and then get you a chance to respond. So Alan and Caboose, and then Izumi, you can respond to those two. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. The wording in comment 341, and I quote, at least quote what is in the comment tool, there is an imbalance in the manner which CC 39 community votes are distributed. CCNSO predominantly comprises government participants, or at least comprises participants more prone to be influenced by the governments. I would question whether the CCNSO members would agree with that. If that is indeed a fact, that the governments predominantly control what CCTLD members would vote, how they would vote, then indeed it's a problem. It's not a problem for this particular power, but for all of them. So I think that's a question that really falls under the item I'm going to be doing later on community mechanisms. But it questions one of the main premises we've had in this whole process. And I think if we're going to discuss it at all, that's got to be discussed by the group as a whole.
Thanks, Alan. Can I ask a procedural clarifying question? When I look at comment 341 in the public comment analysis we did in WP1, it's a comment from IPC, which is talking about the removal of an individual director.
Jordan, what am I doing wrong? Those things got renumbered multiple times.
You're kidding me.
No. Almost every version, they got renumbered as new comments were inserted. I had suggested at one point they'd be frozen. They weren't.
Oh, my God.
Izumi seems to be looking at the same one I'm looking at. It is a comment immediately before question 30. Question 10, rather, from Siva. It's only pure luck I'm looking at the same version that Izumi was.
I had no idea that that had happened, Alan. That's completely unhelpful. But it's very helpful that I now know, so thank you for that. I can't believe that that happens.
Bernie says it did not happen. If your comment 341 is from ITC and mine is from Siva, it did happen.
Great. Okay. Anyway, that's a distraction. why don't we go to Kavus?
I think it is very difficult, and it is non-convincing to agree that CCNSO is influenced and controlled by government. I have not heard any point from any CCNSO member, associates, participants, saying that they are influenced by government. And I have not seen any expression from any government participating on that, trying to influence that. I don't think that we could draw a line in a water, dividing a water by two. It's impossible. So I don't think that we should take that approach, and I don't think that we should go that far. Take into account we have very serious, important issue to deal with within the next 48 or 36 or, I don't know, 72 hours. So I don't take that point. There is no imbalance at all. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. Alan?
Yeah. Thank you. For the record, there are some CCTLDs run by government departments. That's a fact. But the statement that it is the majority of them, I think, is not likely to be verified or found true, or even that the majority of them are strongly controlled by government departments. So I think we need to, along the way, we need to answer this comment. One comment out of whatever number it was, 60 comments that we received, I don't think is a reason to change our whole model. We may, however, want to bring it to the attention of the whole group in Paris just to make sure that there is general agreement that we're not doing something unilaterally. But in any case, I don't think it belongs to this section.
Thanks, Alan. I put my hand up to just offer a few thoughts on the substance here. I think in terms of the time frame, we can put the 15/30 calendar days that could have suggested and then spur the discussion, because I think some of the discussion will flow out of the decisions that we'll make about whether we're actually having a community council or not, and other sort of related aspects of the model. So once we know that, we'll have a better grip on the time frame. In respect of the member structure comment, I think that's again being dealt with by the model discussion we'll have in Paris, so we don't need to worry about it now. The procedural impasse and possible delays, I think we've already talked about that one, in terms of not agreeing to limit the numbers of uses of the power and having it clear that it applies to a period after the decision of the board on the bylaws change is announced. And I think we, again, the balance of power in the community mechanism will be discussed in the context of the overall voting strength and mechanism, so we don't need to worry about it now. That's my view. So I'll put the rapporteur hat back on and say, Alan,
it dawned on me as you were talking that as we're thinking about the period of time, keep in mind that when the comment period was set to 20 or 21 days, as it was after ATRT1, many constituencies and stakeholder groups said they cannot make a decision in that kind of time frame. So since the decisions are going to have to come from the organizations, that is a consideration that we're going to have to think about. I'm not trying to influence the outcome, just keep it in mind.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I think, okay, then we've got another hand. Izumi-san, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Jordan. As a point of clarification, so regarding the third bullet point, which is a concern relating to how you make sure that this procedure will not make the HOLP efficient. I think you mentioned that this will be discussed later in line with some other considerations. So it's not that this will be considered as resolved, but this will be considered later. Is this a fair understanding? I just want to understand what to expect.
I think I've missed the key part of your question, Izumi. Sorry. Does anyone else have an answer for Izumi, or do you want to restate?
Yeah, so I'm happy to restate. So on the third bullet point, which is the area that covers about, so from what I understand from your comment, Jordan, you've mentioned that instead of considering this point as being already solved, would it be a fair understanding that this will be considered later when I didn't actually quite catch your point on how this will be discussed together with what issue, but in any way, this point still be discussed.
By the third point, you mean the CCWG will consider mechanisms for limiting procedural impasse and possible delays?
Yes.
Okay, the way I think that's going to be discussed is by having the time frame highlighted in the track changes, which will spur a discussion about it in Paris. And then we will know to discuss procedural and delays issues in that context. So that's how I think it will get addressed.
Okay, thanks.
Can I take a last call from Caboose?
I'm sorry. If you are dealing that the participations mechanisms or participation partitioning will be discussed further, I cannot agree with that. There is no strong logic nor any strong support to review that. However, in order that we be quite democratic, we say that if time and circumstances permit, we will review that. That's all. We will review that, but there is no strong justification to change that because, once again, I am of the strong view that CCNSO is not influenced by government. Thank you.
Caboose, we've got a different topic in this agenda, which looks at the community mechanism, possibly including the voting rights. So we don't need to discuss it now. You're quite right. We will have some conversation about it later on. So thanks, everyone. I think that's been a helpful discussion. My takeout is that we're going to change the way the dates are expressed in that, and there's a range of options might help to put 15/21/30 calendar dates. And then we're going to go back to the original text at the end of Izumi's paper and not refer to limiting the number of times this can be exercised to 2 points. And then that will be sent as the frozen document for discussion in Paris. So I'm conscious that it's 8:40, and we've got 1 hour 20 minutes to do all of the rest of our work. So I'm going to move us right along to the next agenda item, if that's okay. And thank you, Izumi, for taking us through that. The next agenda item is Alan Greenberg's paper on the removal of individual ICANN directors. So if staff could be able to put that paper up in the screen, that would be cool. And then we'll start discussing it. There we go. Alan, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. As I started to revise the text, I realized that we really had very little basis on which to revise the text. The comments were very mixed and essentially two different flavors. In terms of removing individual board members, and I'm talking about the ACSO ones right now, there were a number of strong comments saying they should be able to be removed by the organization that appointed them. there were similarly a number of very strong comments saying it should be a community mechanism. And I didn't feel that we had really discussed which of those it should be in depth in the original discussion of the CCWG. It originally started off that it should be a community mechanism. The lawyers, when we were talking about membership in particular, said that it had to be the group that appointed them. And we just sort of stopped there. They said, you know, you could arrange a community mechanism with a complex set of contracts. But since we are now perhaps looking at a model where there is not a legal requirement for the originator to do it, and there were a fair number of comments saying the community should remove directors, I didn't really know where to go. And I don't know whether we want to bring it up to Paris. If we want to make a recommendation and, you know, let Paris override, or how to go forward. So I guess I'm looking for input. It'd be easy to draft the text once we know what we're trying to do.
Okay, Alan, that's a place to start the conversation. I thought the legal advice was that whatever model chosen, whether there was a kind of explicit designator or whether there was an explicit membership model or even in the implicit designator model that we've got today, only the appointing body could remove them. But maybe that's a different recollection to your recollection?
Certainly if we're looking at the single community council, that's a body which is going to make a decision. You know, presumably that body will be the body that appoints all directors, and therefore a decision coming out of that body, regardless of how it's made, is a decision. So it's not implicit in that option, which at this point I'm told is on the table. It wasn't 100% clear to me if it was even implicit in the designator model, although it might be. So I'm happy to go forward and say, it is for the ACSO ones, it's the community, it's a sole decision of the community that supported it. That's my personal belief of what it should be. But there were a fair number of comments that said it should be community removal. Now, if you take Steve's statement that anyone who didn't say anything on this accepted the words that were there, then I suppose they're accepting their removal by the ACSO that selected them. But it wasn't really clear. I think the only reference to that was in the NOMCOM section.
I've never heard of a proposal, Alan, that the appointing body for directors would change from what it is today. Your comments now are the first time I've heard someone suggest that appointments of directors would move from the SOs and ACs and NOMCOM to the community council.
In the single member model, I suspect it has to. I'm playing lawyer now, and I shouldn't do that, but my understanding is if that's a member, only members, or if it's the designator, only designators have the right to do it. So I'm not sure they can subcontract with the ACs and SOs. But I'm playing lawyer at this point.
Okay. Well, let's take a speaking list on this and just flesh out people's thinking.
Sure.
Greg, your hand is up.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think, first, the idea that one group could pull another group's appointed or nominated director, I think just sounds wrong. I haven't done serious research on it, but based on everything we've been doing and my own experience, it just sounds wrong. It may be, this is one of the problems with getting comments from, everyone, which is a good thing, but it also sometimes people suggest things that are impossible or illegal or have vast unintended consequences. I
you know, wouldn't be surprised to see somebody suggest that we try turning lead into gold or creating a perpetual motion machine. Those would be interesting suggestions, but they would not work. And we shouldn't start down that road with those, nor should we start down the road with the idea that you can think other people's directives like some game of Battleship. And in terms of the single-member model, we can certainly work things out that the board seats will be, you know, allocated in a certain fashion, whatever it may be. I have no doubt about that. So there won't be some sort of, you know, grand council where everyone has to nominate every board member. Certainly with it, even in the single member model, I'm sure that is possible. And any other models, that's kind of the more or less the essence of those models. So I think those are a couple of rat holes that, despite the fact that I spent some time going down them, I would not suggest anyone follow. Thank you.
And Alan, I realize that I cut across you managing the queue. I'd like to hand that back to you to do. If that's
no,
okay.
No, I don't mind if you do it. We just decide which one of us does it.
Well, if you, I'm happy to.
Go.
I'll do it then.
Okay.
Cavus, your turn.
Yes, removal of the individual board member. It strongly depend on the type of the organization. If you are talking of a single member issue, we should treat them separately. If you are talking of multiple member and designator, removal of the board member by one community seems to be to a greater extent unconstitutional for the following reason. As long as or as soon as a director is designated by an SO or AC, except GAC, who does not have the director, that director would act not only for representation of that community, but in a collegial manner, the overall representations of the entire community. If an SO, director designated, would not satisfy the requirement of that SO designated, but will act properly in the general interest of the entire community, removal of that means that the organization works to protect the interest of a specific community, but not interest of everyone or overall interest. So I don't think that, except in the one single board member, one single membership, which everybody participate in the removal of that director, in the two other cases, it is not appropriate to remove a director because one community is not happy, whereas the other community might be quite happy or more than happy. Thank you.
Thanks, Cabus. The next person whose hand up is Alan.
Okay, thank you. The arguments on both sides, and, you know, I've both lived it in my own group because the ALAC is divided, but I went through all the comments carefully on it. The argument against an individual AC or SO removing their own director is you don't want them capriciously removing the director because they voted against something that AC or SO really wanted. And that's the claim that people make, that if you allow them to do that, then that person is going to be representing that group, which they shouldn't be under the California bylaws. They should be there on behalf of the corporation. We're going to be removing directors right, left, and center if we give ACs and SOs that right. The counter argument is you appoint someone because you believe they are of a like mind, and if you start seeing evidence that that is not the case, then you should be able to reverse it. I will add one caveat to the removal by the community. It would have to be done with the agreement of the appointing SOs and AC. You certainly do not want a situation where all the rest of the AC and SOs gang up and remove my director, even though I'm happy with that person. That would be really problematic, because then you have a director who may be a lone wolf removed by the community who doesn't like, you know, someone rocking the ship. And I think that would be really problematic. So if it is a community action, it would have to be done with the support of and not objection of the appointing AC&SO. So there are some strong arguments that have been made on both sides. My personal opinion is it should be an AC&SO prerogative. But there were significant comments that said community removal. So I'm...
Thanks.
Get back to
Thanks.
This group.
Thanks, Alan. I put myself in the speaking queue. I went back and looked at the summary that we did of the public comments on this, and that public comment summary it's just moved itself out of my vision. That was helpful. There were 25 public comments made. 23 suggested agreement with our proposal. 2 didn't agree. 6 noted concerns, and there was no confusion. There were 2 divergent comments. And the main issues that I've summarily identified were the NOMCOM issue, and there have been concerns since discussed in the community about the nature of what happens to a director if they're subject to removal. Do they suddenly stop doing their job as a director and become a kind of mindless avatar for the particular sectional interests of their appointing body? These are challenges that every organization that appoints board members have, and I don't think that my view is that the removal stuff isn't likely to fundamentally change that dynamic. So I don't feel like we've got a mandate to vary particularly far from our original proposal. And our original proposal was that SOs and ACs should have the power to recall their directors. But I do think we've got a problem with the NOMCOM directors.
Yeah, well, at this point, I'm talking only about the AC&SO ones. We haven't gotten to the NOMCOM ones yet.
Okay, so my view is that we should keep with the status quo of our original proposal.
Okay, I'm happy to do that. I will point out that the summary doesn't demonstrate it, but a fair number of people in their wording said community removal. So they may not have seen that as being different from what we said, but. You know, I read it a different way. They may have been speaking about the community that appointed, as opposed to the community in general. The words were a little bit less clear. Okay, the NOMCOM. I think we have a real problem, though, and I think that's what you said, Jordan. A number of reasons. If you remember the discussion was. It was going to be community removal of the NOMCOM directors. The lawyers pointed out that if the NOMCOM is the group body that appointed, the NOMCOM must be the body that removes. And we therefore started looking at whether the NOMCOM itself should do it, the NOMCOM, a subcommittee of the NOMCOM should do it. I believe that the NOMCOM doing it the regular NOMCOM is problematic in a number of ways. First of all, timing. For those of you who don't know, I'm a NOMCOM appointee right now, and I've resigned my seat as of October because I'm being appointed by the North American RALO instead. The NOMCOM has not found time in the last 2 months to ask for expressions of interest to replace me because they're just too busy working on the normal selection. And so I think timing is going to be a real problem if we ask the NOMCOM to do it. That's number one. Number two, a good number of people said the process to remove a director must be open, transparent, traceable. You know, it's got to be completely open. Giving it to the NOMCOM, which works in private, I think is a real problem. And... I'm in the awkward position of doing the summary, and I presented an alternative in the public comment period. So I'm not really trying to use this, you know, this podium to push my own idea, but it makes some sense in my mind to say that the community council is the NOMCOM subcommittee. It's then the community; it can work openly. It doesn't have a conflict of interest with the other work the group is doing. I think it addresses all of the concerns of removing NOMCOM directors, NOMCOM appointed directors. I'll shut up now.
So, Alan, can I just clarify, the proposal then is that the community council do it? Is that what I just heard you say?
The community council is designated as the NOMCOM subcommittee.
I see.
Which then follows the...
For the purposes of board
rule that it's being done under the name of the NOMCOM, but it's in fact being done by the community council people. You know, they occupy both the community council and simultaneously the NOMCOM subcommittee.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for just clarifying that for me. Carrying on with the speaking list, Carlos, your turn.
Yes, first allow me to express my apology to the lawyer. I cannot agree with the way that they have mentioned that if the NOMCOM appoint directors or select directors, it is up to NOMCOM to remove that. 8 of 16 directors is appointed or selected by NOMCOM. I don't want to put all these 8 at the mercy of NOMCOM. But I agree with the last expression or statement of Alan that if community appoint the subcommittee of NOMCOM, that would be constitutional. That would be an acceptable solutions that the community decide on the issue, but not the NOMCOM nominating somebody and NOMCOM denominating the same person. It's not constitutional. I cannot agree with that. But proposal of Alan or understanding of Alan, it agreed that community appoint subcommittee which deals with the removal of the NOMCOM board. Thank you. NOMCOM designated board. Sorry.
Thank you, Kavus. Next speaker here is Greg.
Thank you, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think as a matter of California law, it has to be the NOMCOM that does it, but that doesn't mean that it has to be, it doesn't mean that we can't be creative, and I think Alan's solution to having the NOMCOM essentially, you know, be embodied, or a subcommittee of the NOMCOM be embodied by the community council makes perfect sense to me. They can, whatever little technical requirements there are to make it kind of come from the NOMCOM, in the end, I'm sure it can be satisfied. But I think, you know, giving it to the broader community and not to the overworked and, you know, fit for a different purpose NOMCOM. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I've been looking at the chat and listening to the discussion and see the concerns that people have with the idea of, first of all, treating different directors differently. So I think it is ideal if we can come up with a way to secure these removals in for all directors other than the president and CEO in the Workstream 1 work. So I kind of withdraw my chat suggestion that we could make the NOMCOM directors Workstream 2. I think that Alan's proposal, if it can be worked through, if it was able to be done, so if it's kind of lawful, and the thing that I find attractive about it is that it is more transparent than the NOMCOM process. So is it worth posing that as the proposal for... discussion in Paris and saying that the two options are amending the way the NOMCOM works so that it can remove those directors itself, and the alternative is to have the community council empowered to do the removal of NOMCOM directors. Is that a two-option approach that it would be reasonable to propose to the Paris meeting? Greg, your hand is either up or still up. Still up. Alan, you go ahead.
Yeah. I think at this point there are three suggestions on the table. One is the NOMCOM proper do it. Now, this isn't the NOMCOM that appointed them. Some previous NOMCOM appointed them based on information only that NOMCOM had. So that's one alternative. The other is a brand new subcommittee of the NOMCOM somehow be created. And the third is what I'm proposing. There's another interesting issue of using the NOMCOM proper. and that is they made the DOMCOM might be being asked to remove a director that they were in the midst of considering for reappointment, which puts them in a serious conflict position. So I think it's the three options. If someone sees it otherwise, I will do whatever you say. But I think it's three options on the table right now.
I don't see how we can. I don't know if we've got time on this call to resolve to a preferred option there. And I would be okay with us setting those three options out for a discussion in Paris in respect of the NOMCOM directors, I think. But there's a couple of hands up, so Greg, and then Kavus. Greg, please go ahead.
Just a quick variation on the brand new committee alternative. I may have mentioned this in the past, would be to have some sort of rump group of the prior NOMCOM be on that committee, since they are the ones that appointed the director in question, so that if the call came to remove that director, the subcommittee would be composed of the same or some of the same people who put that director up in the first place. That avoids the new NOMCOM having to deal with it, knowing not the director and the particulars of how they came to be a director, and also having other work to do. It's just an alternative. It seems to make some sense to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Kavus, please go ahead.
Yes, Jordan. I think we have 2 days meeting in Paris. There is considerable amount of item to discuss. Putting more options create more discussions, generate more discussions. Is it possible either to have one option which is closed to the reality and does not conflict the California law, or reduce the number of the options, and in so doing, we express that in the order of priority, make it easy for Paris meeting to decide. We have many, many items in Paris, and we have only 2 days. Is it possible? Thank you.
Well, I don't think your question is rhetorical, so I'll try to answer it. Is it possible? Yes, but I don't see a proposal in front of us that's attracting kind of a consensus view here. Our original proposal was that we would use the NOMCOM through some means to remove NOMCOM directors, but only on the petition of two or more of the SOs and ACs, I think was the rule. And the reason that we introduced that petitioning step was because we didn't want to just give this very powerful and secret group of people the right to make unilateral decisions on there, because of the fact that NOMCOM is a blend of all the constituencies. And the idea of having a rump group there is one that is empowered to do that. Does leave me a little bit concerned that we would be creating a kind of capture point, that removal of directors is a bit powerful like that. So I don't quite see. I think intuitively speaking, the way that you get around that is possibly that third option that Alan suggested. I think it was the third option that Alan suggested, of having a the community council being the effective removal agent, because that then does incorporate that input. But we'll carry on the list. Greg and Alan's hands are up. So, Greg, please go ahead.
I think Greg is an old one.
Okay. Old. Alan?
Yeah. Regarding the rump group, I strongly object to it, because that's a NOMCOM from as much as 3 years ago. The people may not even be involved, they may not be active, they may not be current in what's going on in ICANN. But I'm happy to include that as one of the methods of staffing this new subcommittee. So that's a variation of one of the three variations. I sensed among most people on this group, but not all, that using the community council was an acceptable method. If my sense was correct, then we can do that as the preferred one and the other two alternatives. If my sense is wrong, then I'll just list them as three alternatives for discussion.
I'm not near my hand. Please put me in the queue.
I think we're about to hear it's not a preferred solution. But, Jordan, I'll leave it up to your direction to sense the tone of the group.
Well, Avery, please go ahead.
Thanks. I'm only a tone of one, but I actually have a great deal of problem with the idea of having the community council, whatever it's properly called, become the body that deals with that. First of all, I really do accept this notion that the designator or member that picks somebody needs to be the one. You know, we have talked about ways of dealing with the NOMCOM issue and having a recall NOMCOM, which seems to have been put completely aside among the possibilities. But the idea that you would take the community at large and they would be able to look at any NOMCOM at any time when it was just appointed, for example, and you know how most of us, when we see the new NOMCOM appointees, there's never resounding assurance. And to what degree do we prevent the having a NOMCOM and a counter NOMCOM that looks at what a NOMCOM comes up with and says, no, that's not the right mix, and deciding that they should cancel those. I think it's very antithetical to having a NOMCOM. And we'll probably argue until I'm blue in the face against this. But I'm only a voice of one.
Thanks, Avery. So I'm a little bit bemused about where exactly we go here. There are a number of proposals floating around. And in terms of checking the sense of the room, in terms of checks and crosses, I'm not not entirely sure where we go with that one, Greg, what we'd be looking for ticks and crosses on, which is not a helpful place for your rapporteur to have led you or not led you, as the case may be. If we do just do the sense of the room check, not a vote, a sense of the room check on these options, would it be fair to say they are the original proposal, where there is a kind of recall NOMCOM that acts on petition? So the original proposal, recall NOMCOM with community petition, and then if option B was the community council as a recall NOMCOM, and then option C, can someone remind me what option C was?
The operational NOMCOM.
The current NOMCOM. So do people feel that's just to try and get a sense of where we are as a room? Can we just test those for those who access the voting buttons? If you think that the original proposal with the recall NOMCOM that can act after a community petition is the way to go, can you do a green tick at the moment? Let's see what we say. I see two green ticks, Avery and I. Okay, let's put our hands down. And then could I ask about the B option, the community council essentially functioning as a recall NOMCOM? Could you give a green tick to that if you'd like to have a green tick? That's for...
Avous, did you put your hand up or tick or try to?
Yes, I, Alan.
No, I'm not calling on you. I'm just asking. Was that a mistake?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Or
I don't. I have difficulty with option three. Why existing situation? We have discussed it. The first proposal was every proposal. The second proposal is what you have suggested, and we agree with option A and B, but not C. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Caboose. C's got six ticks plus Caboose, seven. A's got four ticks if you include Matthew saying he could live with A and Caboose saying he could live with A. And so let's take those green hands down. Take your greens off. Degreen yourself. Untick. Are there any ticks for option C? This is not a vote. This is a test of the sense of the room. So please, this is just an opinion testing ground.
C is the original NOMCOM? Is the current NOMCOM.
Yeah. C is the current NOMCOM. Okay, so let's leave that option off. No one is putting up a green hand for the current NOMCOM being the removal body. Whether that causes us difficulties later or not is for the future to determine. And if we look at those first two options, the Community Council to Recall NOMCOM is the one that got the most preference. So can we, Alan, when you're drafting this up, would it be possible to put that as the option that attracted most support when Working Party One discussed this issue?
Yeah.
It's a very honest formulation of what just happened. And I think it's probably worth referencing the other two options as well, just so the CWG can see them. And we are going to just have to discuss this in some depth in Paris. We do have time in the agenda for it.
Yeah, the one we're almost rejecting here was number one option, so I think we have to maintain it on the list, but say it's the least preferred. All right, I think I have my marching orders on all of this. I hope
okay.
I'll do it. I hope my memory will prove to be accurate when I actually do the drafting, but I'll do my best.
You have 26 hours and 46 minutes.
Oh, good.
Just so you know. Yep, Caboose, that is noted that we shouldn't canvass option C. Look, folks, this call is proceeding very well, but it is just going a little bit slower than we need to. We do have a bit more material to get through. Thank you very much, Alan, for that discussion. Now, at the moment, as it stands, we've got three agenda items left to deal with. We've got the community mechanism work that Alan has done. We've got the fundamental bylaws work that I've done. And we've got now, just sent through by email, Keith Jarzak, hot off the press, the recall of the whole ICANN board content. Now, I would really like us to discuss these all at a high level rather than delving into quite as much detail as we have. So we've got two options. One is that we make sure we just take probably 10 minutes for each of them, get a high-level look at it, identify main points of comfort or discomfort, or we carry on as we have been, doing deep dives, and we will definitely run out of time. If we run out of time, we've got no more call scheduled, so that would mean we would have to have an only email discussion. My preference is the first option, that we have some voice time on all three of these papers and then can discuss further by email. Can we have ticks for people who propose that we follow that proposal from me and crosses from people who want to just keep going with the deep dive? I want to make sure we get the chance to discuss everything, even if only briefly.
You've got a mandate.
Okay. Let's carry right on then. And the first thing we'll do is take a quick question from Caboose before we move on to the next agenda item.
I support your proposal to discuss all three items on a high level, 10 to 12 minutes, and then the remaining part will be an email discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. Perfect. Okay, that's what we're going to do. And so the next item on the agenda in the order is the community mechanism. So, Alan, once again, the floor is yours. If you could ideally restrict your presentation of this to 3 or 4 minutes, that would be ideal. And staff, if you could load Alan's new doc, that would be marvelous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Go ahead.
Thank you. this one should be a lot easier because we have reviewed this to a great extent already. The first part of it is the difficult part. It's the number of votes per section, per AC and SO. The comments, there were generally very few comments. Some of them were cryptic because we sadly in Section 5 defined two things as the community, as a reference mechanism. One was the member versus designator, and the other was the voting mix. And we only asked one question at the end saying, do you support the reference mechanism? So that was less than clear. Usually I could figure out from the content, the rest of the sentence, what they were answering. There were a number of comments. There was largely silence. There were a few people who said they support A. There was one person who said they support A. One person said they absolutely refused to support A. Those have perhaps canceled each other out. There were a number of support for B. The ALAC said that they would like to hear from the RSAC and SSAC. The RSAC was largely silent, saying we want more details, and the SSAC basically said we want zero. Perhaps now with the SSAC present at the meeting, we will get a little bit more clarity whether they want to exercise zero or don't want anything at all. And remember, that comment was in light of a membership model, which may or may not be the one we're talking about at the time. So I really did not know how to go. I think we can, with some freedom, eliminate alternative A, which is the four votes and two votes, four votes for SOs and two votes for ACs. I'm not sure that we have as much of a mandate to go to eliminate alternative B, so I am happy to leave it as the reference mechanism, the original one, and the alternative is equal votes per AC and SO. So I'd like to settle that, then we'll go on to the next part, which should not be nearly as controversial.
Are there speakers on this? I could offer a comment while the people are deciding whether to speak, which I think it's reasonable also to remove option alternative A and to leave alternative B, which would then call it alternative 1 or something, as a possible other one, just to spur discussion in Paris. Alternatively, just the strike through of alternative A will generate the discussion. So I'm relaxed either way. Greg, your hand's up.
Thank you, Greg Chatton, for the record. I wouldn't necessarily be so quick to strike through A, although I guess if it's left up there but struck through, it can still be discussed. Because in essence, as long as we have fractional voting, it's kind of a compromise between the 5 and 2 and the 5 and 5 because it gives it's a smaller gap between the two-vote groups and the more-vote groups. So I would encourage people to think of it as a compromise and to think that if you have five, let's say you want to have five people because you have five regions, well, then each of them just has four-fifths of a vote instead of, you know, a full vote, whatever your internal math would be, just as long as, you know, there may be some maximum amount. But I think this has to be viewed in light of the fractional voting concept and not viewed as a question of numbers of seats. So really this is about weighting of votes, not about the number of voices at the table.
Jordan, may I respond to Greg?
Yeah.
Greg, I hope you're reading that correctly. Option A and B are not just slightly the difference in spread. Option A gives the GAC and the ALAC the same number of votes as an SO. Option alternative A does not. So I just want to make sure you're clear on that, because I don't think that's what I heard you implying.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right, actually. I see this one kind of devolves the ACs and only gives the SOs four votes. So never mind. It's not really compromised. That's what I get for trying to be on 17 calls in one day.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Greg, Caboose, your hand is up.
Yes, I think I agree with the proposed course of action. We delete alternative A and we retain alternative B as one option. At this stage, I don't think that we are convinced by the proposal, not proposal, question by ICANN board why the two SAC and RSAC has lesser number of that. We had some justification, we have some discussion on that, and that is what we come up with this. So I don't think that we should change this at this moment. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Caboose. So basically, I think, Alan, the writing instructions from this discussion are to just keep the strike through the way that it is there, and we can move on. So
okay, and I'll also adjust the rationales to eliminate the references to A. All right. The next part is all new text, and it really tries to summarize the issues that we that were proposed by the subgroup looking at this, and I think were discussed on a WP1 call. I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't invent anything new at this point. I just tried to rephrase it in a way that was logically consistent. And I don't know if anyone's had a chance to read the individuals. I can go over it at this point. But with the exception of the unresolved issue at the bottom, which I think we still have to present, and is Steve on this call?
Sure, I'm here.
Yeah, you were going to send me a summary of the powers the GAC was losing that I was going to insert here, or put in a comment or something.
Yeah, I put it in the stress test, so let me just quickly paste those into the chat. Thank you, Al.
Okay. Or I can leave it for Steve to say when we discuss the issue. Perhaps that's even better. He does it more forcefully than I can. So at this point, I'm moderately happy. I don't think I made any decisions. I just rephrased things. And why don't we stop the discussion right now? I'm not going to do the work on this for another perhaps 4 hours or so. So if anyone has any specific comments or typos or something, why don't you send them to me, and I'll do a revision later on tonight and give you back the rest of the time.
Thanks, Alan. Caboose, your hand is up.
Yes. Half a minute of comments. The issue of fractional vote within, inside each community or constituency was discussed, and Mr. Rickert referred to as the granularity. I think we need not to go to that, and perhaps we should add after this saying that the subdivisions or ramifications of the number of votes or granulation of the number of votes should be left to each community to decide according to its rules and procedures. And we should not get to that level of details. Thank you. This is just a comment for Alan. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. So I think that's the spirit of that new paragraph 194 that Alan had. So, and I agree with you. The point I wanted to raise with myself in the speaking list was just on, I like the way this is set out. Thank you, Alan. And I think the unresolved issue does need to be discussed. The only one I've got a concern about there is actually subclause G of the new paragraph. For each power, there'll be a critical number of yes votes which will be required. So that says that we're setting thresholds based on an absolute number of votes. That means essentially that abstentions have the effect of raising the percentage thresholds of votes that are available. And so I think that that's fine as an essential proposal, but what it means is that if we include RSAC and SAC in this, and they abstain, and we say there are 20 votes required in favor, we just need to be careful of what the veto points will be for the number of yes votes that are created by this system, because it means that it isn't a fixed percentage. It means that the more people who abstain, the higher the percentage is required to make a power be exercised. So we just need to think that all through really clearly. That's all I had to say.
Okay.
Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah. If that's what it said to you, then it was worded wrongly. The intent is that there still be a threshold, two-thirds, three-quarters, whatever the number is, of those who are voting yes or no. So abstentions or simply opting out don't count. They disappear from
okay.
the count.
And I think what you need to do to get that in G, just change the words, there will be a critical number of yes votes, and change it to a defined proportion or defined percentage of yes votes.
No, the point I'm getting at there is not overriding the threshold, which will be listed under powers, because each of those powers has a defined percentage or ratio that has to have yes votes to no to total votes.
I agree.
This says that if everyone opts out except the ALAC,
mm-hmm.
then three out of five ALAC votes cannot kill the board.
I see.
That is the ratio, or you know, that would be 100. You know, five out of five ALAC votes to kill the board is 100%. But we may deem mm-hmm. five to be not enough of 29 to exercise a community power. Because you're allowing people to opt out or to abstain, you're reducing the denominator such that the maximum
yeah.
numerator may be a very small number. And the question
yeah.
is, what is the number that we want to have as the absolute number, which says we're exercising a power? It may not be worded well, but that was the intent.
Okay, I think I need to mull on this a bit and write something in an email about it.
Okay.
So I think what it might be is that we need a number for each power, we need to set a quorum, so a minimum number of participating votes to let
that,
the power happen.
Yes, okay, setting the denominator.
Yeah.
I was setting the numerator. Setting the denominator will work just as well, and it's the same. You can get one from the other by doing the arithmetic.
Except it does mean that
yours is probably worded better, and I'll change that to quorum.
Except that it means that abstentions have the effect of preventing the use of the power. So depending on where you set it. So there are no easy routes here. And what I'm thinking of, it's a bit like a quadratic equation in a way, where you could have a number of minimum conditions, and as long as they're all met, then the power can be used. But that's what I want to just mull on and write you something. There's no easy way to do this.
Yeah, that was the intent. I will try to reword it somewhat better if I don't hear specific suggestions from you. I'll try to reword it, and there'll be an opportunity
okay.
in Paris to tear it apart again.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Caboose, your hand is up, and then
yes,
we'll move on.
My question is that, are we on the unresolved issue or not yet? If not yet, I wait.
Well, if we are, we can be. Your hand is up, so let's have your thoughts on that.
Yes, I think during the GAC meeting, since I am a member of the GAC, they agreed that by 14th of July they will send comments to CCWG relating to their views with respect to the activities of CCWG. Therefore, I think we need to wait. I don't mind if you put two proposals or alternative proposal on this, but I don't think that there is any contradiction in the existing paragraph, and I don't know why we call them unresolved issue. In the bylaw, there is clear mention that public policy issue is exclusive rights and authorities of the GAC, and I think for that they deserve to have this advice to the board, and the board is to implement the advice unless it has a good reasons why it's not implemented, and then come to some sort of discussion with the GAC for the way possibly to find the solution. So I don't think that at this stage we should decide between the two. We should wait until we receive the formal reply from the GAC, and then we present the issue at Paris meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. 2 points. First of all, I think that what's unresolved is just the CCWG's view on whether those advisory powers should coexist with participation in the mechanism or not. And that is what this paragraph is designed to generate a conversation about. And so I think it does that fairly. The second point is that the questions and the GAC members' answers to those questions have now been transmitted to the CCWG. So have a look in your email. They came from Tom someone, and they came through maybe 12 or 18 hours ago. So there's 24 pages of reading for you to do there. And ICANN staff are working on a summary of that 24 pages to send around ASAP. Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that this issue came up not in the public comments, but live in Buenos Aires, and there were it was said with enough vehemence by a few people that I don't think we can pretend it wasn't said, which is why I listed it here as an unresolved issue.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Look, folks, we've said we'll limit our time, and so we've got to limit our time, so we've got to move on. Strongly and warmly and firmly encourage you to add thoughts by email on this in the next few hours to give Alan some more work to go on. And thank you, Alan, for presenting that. A little bit of a sort of time pressure here, folks. The next one I'd like us to work through just briefly, I think, is Keith Drazak's recent paper that's just been circulated to staff. It's only been circulated to staff, I think, at this point, but I'm sure that Keith will put it around on the email list pretty shortly thereafter. Keith, the floor is yours, and I think the document might be about to arrive.
All right. Thank you very much, Jordan. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. Very good. So I think Brenda is updating or uploading the document, so it should be in front of us. This shouldn't take long because we spoke at quite some length on Friday about the substance, but I took the action item to try to incorporate the results of our discussion, making sure that it was consistent with the public comments received, so we have something for the freeze document. So there we go in front of us. I assume everybody has scroll control and can maximize that to your eyesight's needs. I think just to summarize, there was strong support for this power coming out of the public comment periods. I made some edits starting in paragraph 241, just to add, beyond the power set out above, I just added in section 5.5 because I'm pretty sure that was the recalling the individual board member section. And then to clarify, in the second sentence, to talk about the two-thirds of the SOs and ACs, one of the things that we identified in the previous discussion on Friday was it was a little bit unclear as to whether that was the sum of the SOs and ACs, two-thirds, or if it was individual, and I think we agreed that that was the sum of the SOs and ACs in ICANN with at least one SO and one AC petitioning. So I wanted to make that clarification as we move into the next phase. And what I've done here is, in the comments, which you can't see over to the right, is to identify where our action items are. So the phrase I left in there said, implementation of this community decision will be accompanied through a further step to be developed in conjunction with legal counsel. So that's our action item number one, as a work party one, is to engage with the legal advisors to develop further implementation details around this. Okay, in paragraph 242, I added the clarification around the set period of time that we discussed, and I put in brackets a suggested 30 calendar days, and I tried to make that consistent with the discussion from earlier today on this call, where we wanted to be sure it was calendar days as opposed to some less precise definition of weeks. And I picked the number 30 as a discussion point. If we feel that needs to be 15, or if it can be up to 30 calendar days, then I'm comfortable with that. But I simply put in the placeholder or the bracketed language of 30 days. All right. At the end of 242, I removed the sentence about the implementation to be developed in conjunction with legal counsel simply because it was repetitive. I think it was unnecessary to state it twice at this stage of our process. Next item, 243, is our action item number two, which is for the work party one to ensure that our proposed process around this model syncs with whatever the reference model becomes. And this was specific to the phrase available within the community mechanism. I don't think we need to spend any more time on this particular topic, but it was just a note that we need to make sure that when we talk about available within the community mechanism that we're confident that this is synced up with whatever the reference model becomes. Okay, moving on to section paragraph 245. Again, per our discussion on Friday, I removed 245 as that was relative to the 80% threshold versus the 75%, and the strong public comment response was supportive of 75% with only one or two comments in support of 80%. So I have removed that, and the number of 75% above in 243 is what we're moving forward with. Section 246, I made some minor edits, one removing the term members, which was capitalized, and simply stating community process. So ongoing work in the CCWG accountability will flesh out how to implement this community decision through the ICANN community process and how to deal with transitional matters raised. Okay, that is action item number three. Action item number three is for the work party to engage with legal advisors on the question of a caretaker board and or an interim board replacement process. And with that, I added a couple of sentences that acknowledge that following the receipt of public comments and further Work Party 1 discussion, the CCWG and Work Party 1 will now work to develop a process for establishing a caretaker board to act in an interim capacity while the community pursues its normal ICANN board director appointment process. The process for establishing a caretaker board must be clearly defined to minimize instability, and such definition will address concerns surrounding the potentially limited pool of caretaker board candidates and will ensure a transition phase that does not rely on a carryover of recalled board members. I took both of those points both from the public comment period as well as from our discussions on Friday. And then finally, at the end, I added the point where the CCWG acknowledges the dependency between our Community Power 5.6 and the CWG transition reference under their heading Community Empowerment Mechanisms, and that to note that there is a dependency there and an expectation of the CCWG, the CWG expects this to be incorporated as a dependency. So let me pause there. I apologize for running through this quickly. Let me see if any questions. Steve, go ahead.
Well, that was fast, Keith. No problem. In the paragraph where you mentioned community mechanism, and it's paragraph 243, I just wanted to clarify, is the community mechanism, the conversation we just finished with Alan Greenberg, where the mechanism is the collection of votes, whether it's a community council or not, it's the voting mechanism. And it's not at all the enforcement model, which could be member, could be designator, could be something else.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Thanks for the question. And my expectation, and I'm certainly open to others' views on this, is that it would be the model that Alan just described.
Fantastic. And because there's confusion, because the word reference model was used two places in our proposal. Once for this voting allocation that Alan just described and what you call the community mechanism, and later we used the word reference model for the notion of membership, which is only to do with enforcement. So that makes me jump to what you talked about implementation on paragraph 246, please. 246, you used the word implement the community decision. And this is our opportunity to clarify that I guess we're really saying to enforce the community decision as opposed to implement. Is that, I mean, there's a difference, I guess. Implement takes on board the question of an interim board, because we may not have had to resort to any enforcement powers. The board may simply honor the community's will and resign, and then we have to deal with an interim board. So that's implementation. But completely apart from that would be this notion that if the board refused to follow the community mechanism's will per the bylaws, then we have to look at enforcement. And enforcement isn't mentioned at all, I think, in here. Thanks, Keith.
Thanks very much, Steve. And I think you're right in your assessment. I think the implementation discussed in 246 is really about coming up with the recognition that we need to come up with the process and that we need to have an implementation plan that minimizes risk and acknowledges the concerns that were raised in the public commentary. I think that is a completely separate discussion from the enforcement that you raise, which is obviously still very important. So I guess the question then is, do you have some suggested language for 243, where we talk about the community mechanism, or 246 for community process, that where we could make it more explicit and to reduce any question or confusion?
For 243, I would say, along with the mechanism for ACs and SOs to exercise the community power. Mechanism for ACs and SOs to exercise the community power, which is
okay.
literally the voting. And then I would stick with implement the community decision, but just the way you have it in 246. And it's possible, just because some people are confused, we could possibly add a small paragraph that says that if the board should choose not to follow the bylaws-dictated community mechanism, that we would have we'll have further discussion of ways of legal enforcement.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Steve. Alan, you're next.
That covers his
action. Add confusion to the confusion, the term reference mechanism was used in the report both for the membership model as opposed to designators and for the voting split. The term reference model was not actually used at all. So,
okay, thanks, Alan.
That's the confusion.
Right. All right, thank you, Alan. And I apologize, Kovus. My Adobe Connect was scrolled down too far. So over to you.
No problem. I think I have either I agree with what Steve proposed with some addition. He proposed that community powers. I would add as referred to in paragraph and cross-reference the paragraph. Or without any mention to community powers, just say that to the vote on the matters, of all support as referred to in paragraph so and so. So in summary, cross-reference to the paragraph, with or without community power. Both are acceptable to me. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Thank you very much, Carlos. That's helpful.
Excuse me. I have another point on the 246.
Yes.
Did you consider that the caretaker board has the same authority, mandate, responsibility of the traditional board member, or because their mission are limited, there might have some exceptions provided that their tasks are limited to certain things which are absolutely necessary for the smooth operations of the ICANN board? Or do we delegate all the power of the traditional board to the caretaker board or not? This is the question.
Yes. Thank you very much, Kavus. Good question. It is something that we discussed on the call on Friday. And it is a topic open for discussion. So it is something that we need to spend some further time and discuss. There is a question as to whether there was a minimum set of responsibilities that could be sufficient for a caretaker, and that's something that we need to discuss with our lawyers. So thank you for raising that. All right. Jordan, over to you.
Thanks, everyone. Yep, that's been a useful discussion. You've got a few tweaks to make out of that, I think. Keith, is that fair to say?
Yep, I'll do it in the next half hour, probably. Thanks.
That'd be wonderful. If you could fire it around, that'd be great. Thanks, Keith. I think the next one is my one on the fundamental bylaws. And so if staff could load that. And we also, while they're loading it, Alan, there was one thing that you wanted to raise, 1 minute of content for something that's highlighted that we missed. Can you just quickly deal with that now?
Yeah, it's on in section 5.5 and removing directors, and it was the last one on page 2 of my document, and it reads, our initial view is that such a removal process should only be triggered on the petition of at least 2 SOs or ACs, and in brackets it says, or a stakeholder group from the GNSO. And I'm not sure what the intent was. I don't know if a stakeholder group from the GNSO is an alternative to an AC. Is it an alternative to an SO? And did it really mean a house of the GNSO? So I don't know what it meant. So I'm not sure what to do with it.
If it's highlighted, just leave it highlighted.
Okay.
I don't think we can fix it now.
All right. I was hoping someone here would remember what it meant, because I don't have a clue. as it were worded right now, it makes either no sense or is objectionable. I'm not sure which.
I think it's more likely to be the latter. The alternative is to delete it.
I'll leave it highlighted and raise it in Paris.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, sorry, this is a time pressure
thing. Okay.
Caboose, can I go through my paper?
If you want to delete that, I have no problem. But if you want to retain that, I have difficulty why a subsection of a GNSO has the same power or the same mandate of a SO and ACY. There is no justification for that. Thank you.
I think it meant a house, because a house in the GNSO appoints directors. I think that's what the intent was, but we'll leave it for Paris.
Why don't you delete it and track changes, and then everyone is happy.
Okay.
And we can move on. Right. Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Caboose. So what I did with this, I had a bit of a meltdown yesterday with the fact that I couldn't find in the frozen public comment tool any analysis of the questions, the public comments on Section 3.2 of the report, where we set out what fundamental bylaws are. And then I found out that Working Party 2 had done an analysis of them and that it hadn't somehow been included in the public comment tool. So I'm a bit worried about this public comment tool now, especially when you add to that the changing of numbers that has happened. But anyway, that was provided to me in time before I did my own analysis of the comments. I read through the work that WP2 had done, and I read through the work that we had done in analyzing the comments on 5.4, which is where we talk about the community power of co-approving changes to the fundamental bylaws. And the consensus of the summaries was that people supported this notion that there needed to be a stronger linkage to why it was that this would improve ICANN accountability, and that the CWG stewardship's proposals would often need to be seen as fundamental bylaws, and that there were views both ways on whether the location of HQ should be made fundamental or just left as it is in the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws. So that's the little gray note at the top to just draw people's eye. And then if you scroll down, there's a reasonable amount of track change, but it isn't intended. None of it relates to changing the power itself. All of that stuff on the bottom of the first page is about trying to explain or contextualize better what we're doing. The way that we're making them harder to change these fundamental bylaws is by sharing the authority to authorize them between the board and the community, and by imposing higher thresholds to authorize changes there. I've just tried to improve the explanation on that first page. And then I've also tried to explain in my mind how it would improve backend accountability, which is that it spreads the role, the right to change these fundamental points, and it links that to the INS stewardship transition. So I'm just going to run through this whole doc and then take a speaking list. There are not very many changes in the next section 3.2.2 or 3.2.3. They all seemed fine. 3.2.4, I added the reference to the stewardship transition because that has come through. I kind of reworded the INF functions review. So now we're on page 3, looking at the list of bylaws that would propose to be fundamental. And there's a kind of clarification of the word the INF functions review and separation review defined in the CWG stewardship proposal, and the PTI and the customer standing committee structures defined in the CWG stewardship's proposal. And I've noted then the suggestion by some commenters of requirements on ICANN's headquarters being located as fundamental, and that others suggested the opposite. And I proposed for discussion in Paris that we should say that such reasons do not require fundamental status. There's no current intention to move ICANN's HQ, and jurisdiction matters are dealt with in Workstream 2. And I also note that the availability of new power to block changes to standard bylaws increases the barrier to any change in ICANN's HQ location. And then that flows down into the power to change fundamental bylaws. There were some concerns raised about the operational impact of this, and I've tried to explain why that's not likely to really arise. I've clarified the spreading of authority through this by creating the co-decision process, which is that in itself creates a higher threshold for change and also distributes the change more broadly in the community. And I've argued basically that fundamental bylaws are unlikely to be changed frequently, and where changes are made, they're unlikely to arise with short notice. It's not ever going to be an emergency to change a fundamental bylaw. And so concerns about the operational impact is important. That's the draft text there. I don't know whether any of it is controversial. I hope that it's clearly expressed. I would welcome a speaking list. Greg, you're on the list.
Thanks. My hand was actually up on the previous document, but you missed me. Briefly respond on that, but I also have a point on this. The point on having SGs having the same weight as, say, other SOs and ACs is that, for instance, you have the NCSG, which represents, after a fashion at least, all of civil society, and you have the commercial stakeholder group, which represents all of the business private sector, and together they have only, as much as maybe two RALOs. So you've taken all of business and all of civil society and reduced them to a sliver. So that's where that comes from. Whether that's tilting against windmills at this point, maybe it is, but I think it's a point that should not go unnoticed. It may well get noticed by the business community. In any case, on this, I think the one thing that I think is potentially controversial, obviously is controversial. I think we had quite a bit of discussion is the whether the headquarters bylaw should be fundamental, and I think that this would be a lot easier to sell as non-fundamental if we can point out the other affirmation of commitments aspects that are not becoming fundamental bylaws. Otherwise, it seems like we're picking on one to become non-fundamental, as opposed to going through more of a screen on this point. I think it's probably a point that's symbolic more than practical for both sides. But if it's if it can at least be put into perspective that we haven't taken everything else from the AOC and made it fundamental but this, it will be less symbolic at least. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Steve, your hand is up.
Yes, for some perspective, Greg, not all of the commitments in the affirmation went to fundamental. For instance, all four of the AOC reviews did not go to fundamental. Only the IANA functions review is fundamental at the request of the CWG. But the other four reviews in the affirmation of commitments go to regular bylaws because they're likely to change. They have a lot of details in them. And then that's the perspective part. I concur with your point about the cruel irony of suppressing all of the non-commercial and commercial stakeholders to just one half of the single ACSO called GNSO, and I note that Robin agreed too. And there are other ways we can scratch that itch, having a number of voting seats on affirmation review teams, for example, which we'll discuss when we get to Paris. I realize that. So that's my reaction to your perspective point. Okay, Greg? Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. If you could track some changes, maybe that just reflect that to clarify the point, I'd be super grateful for that. Kavus, your hand is up.
Yes, 1 minute of clarification sought by me through you to Steve. In Buenos Aires, in the last meeting of CCWG, I mentioned about the court and jurisdiction, and Steve told me that in some paragraph it is mentioned that it is not necessarily the Californian court, where it is indicated that it depends on the situation and maybe different court in different countries and so on. So that is still something that some people talking and asking me, and I have told that it was a verbal explanation, but I have not found the paragraph that clearly mentioning this. Thank you.
Do you want to respond briefly to that, Steve?
Sure, I guess I could. But, Kavus, the question of jurisdiction has very little to do with where ICANN's headquarters is. In fact, the nation of Iran can haul ICANN into court if it thinks that ICANN is influencing or affecting the citizens of Iran in a way that violates Iranian law. It has nothing to do with where it's headquartered. And the lawyers in the call are bound to put their hands up right now and correct me because I'm not a lawyer. But in general, we completely separated the question of headquarters location from the question of jurisdiction, and I think we successfully made that case. When it comes to jurisdiction, affirmation paragraph 8B was ICANN's commitment to remain in the U.S. as its location, not remain, I'm sorry, but ICANN's commitment that it would have a U.S. location, in addition to lots all around the world. We analyzed that carefully against Article 18 in the bylaws and Articles of Incorporation for ICANN, both of which declare that ICANN as a California corporation would have its headquarters in Los Angeles. Given that, we concluded that you didn't necessarily have to bring affirmation of commitments, paragraph 8B, into the bylaws. In other words, it's already there. And that left us with the question of whether what's already there, Article 18, should or should not be a fundamental bylaw. And my best analysis of the comments that came in the public comment period was that it was a pretty even split between those who felt Article 18 of the current bylaws should become fundamental or not. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I don't want us to get into a discussion about the substance of this. We don't need to. The only question is whether this is should be in the fundamental status or not, and the only issue is whether the text survives. And because we've happily or unhappily run completely out of time, I'm not going to take the speaking list if I can help it. With your indulgence, what I'd like to invite you to do, Kavus Allen, anyone, and let's just set aside that mention of a particular country and not keep going on this jurisdiction track. I don't think there is the clear reference that you're looking for, Kavus.
Yes, I put it in the chat. I just want to mention also on the call that I never, ever referred to any specific country,
yes.
And I refrain to refer to any specific country. I have to be impartial and totally neutral. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. I'm just making the point that this is not relevant to what we're talking about, which is the fundamental bylaws. It is a relevant about jurisdiction that should be mentioned somewhere else in the report, but not in this part. So I'll just wrap up by thanking you all for the phenomenal amount of work that we've done here in the last week, only week and a half maybe, to all of the people who took some lead responsibility in getting these papers ready, to all the judges, to all the people who have offered comments and thoughts and wisdom. I really appreciate it. It's great work on the part of the ICANN community. If you are redrafting or freezing documents, please get them through, not to me, but just send them straight to the Working Party One list. The freeze point is in 26 hours. For my sins, I'll do a little bit more tweaking of this one and send it around again later today, New Zealand time. Please don't be late. Please don't miss the freeze deadline. Please get stuff out there sooner rather than later if you can. Thank you all very much for all this work. And I'll see you hopefully all in Paris. Thanks, everyone.